Welcome to Rainy Day Rabbit Holes,
a uniquely Pacific Northwest podcast.
I'm Shay.
And I'm Jody.
Each week, we will take you on a journey through the quirky, mysterious, and fantastic stories of PNW history.
So grab your North Face jacket and strap on your Tevas, pour yourself a cup of Northwest roasted coffee, and
let's fall down the rabbit hole.
All right. Cue the spooky music, because here we go. In the chronicles of medical history, there are figures whose actions stand as stark reminders of the ethical boundaries that must be upheld in the practice of medicine. Linda Burfield Hazard, a controversial figure from the early 20th century, occupies a notorious place in the medical history. Hers is a story of a sadistic and greedy quack who convinced the wealthy elite that her treatment at Wilderness Heights facility would kill all that ails them. In reality, the facility, better known as Starvation Heights, killed all who subscribed to the cure. This is a story of exploitation, manipulation, and the dangers of unchecked authority.
Oh, I can bump, bump, bump now. Bump, bump, bump.
All right, Shay, are you ready for an exciting story about a crazy lady in Olalla, Washington?
I love crazy ladies.
I know. That's why we're such good friends. Good thing you love crazy ladies.
Exactly. Let's do it.
Born Linda Burfield in 1867, Carver County, Minnesota, to middle-class parents, she had an unremarkable upbringing. At the age of 18, she married and had two children. But in 1898, at the age of 31, and after 13 years of marriage, Linda left her family in pursuit of her career. She sought a career as a medical doctor, but was not accepted to medical school. After a very brief training, she worked as an osteopathic nurse in Minnesota. She began her career in Minneapolis with unconventional ideas about health and healing. She rejected conventional medicine and embraced the practice of fasting as a cure for various ailments. Her beliefs centered around the concept of auto-intoxication, the idea that toxins build up in your body and fasting was the key to cleansing these impurities.
So bypassing the work of the liver.
Right. Like we don't even got one.
Mm-hmm.
Hazard studied under Edward Hooker Dewey, author.
Hooker. Sorry.
Hooker Dewey.
Hooker Dewey?
He was a Dewey Hooker.
Hooker Dewey.
That's Hooker a good... Dewey.
That one was quite a Hooker Dewey.
I don't know. I immediately went to Dukes of Hazard. I don't know.
I know. Okay.
I wonder if it was as funny back then. Like in 1898 is the
Dr. Hooker Dewey, and everybody's just like
Hooker Dewey. Okay. He is the author of The Gospel of Health, a very popular proponent for fasting for health. Dr. Dewey's teachings propelled Linda Hazard into a lifetime career of starving people for money under the auspices of healing.
I could do that.
Run a cult or
both. I could starve people for money. Come here, give me your money, and I won't give you any food.
Yeah, right. Could you convince them? I bet you could.
I think you could be a cult leader. Yeah, you know I can mm-hmm. be a cult leader. Yeah. It's one of my special skills.
We should start our... Yeah, never mind. It appears she killed her first patient before her divorce was even final in 1902. So she leaves her husband and her children to start her career as a doctor. Doesn't make it as a doctor, but manages to kill her first patient before she even gets divorced legally. The coroner ruled the death of this very first patient as a homicide by starvation and tried to prosecute her. This could have all... What you're about to hear in the story could have all been avoided if this prosecutor was able to incarcerate Linda Hazard at this time. But it turns out that in Minnesota, since she was not a licensed medical doctor, she was not licensed to practice medicine in Minnesota, she could not be charged with starvation.
Oh, Jesus. So you're fine killing people as long as you are not a licensed medical doctor.
Yes, absolutely.
But then why couldn't they just get her for murder?
Well, I think because I'm not quite sure.
Because they have to prove intent to do harm, I guess.
Or was she...
I should be like, I didn't think force him to starve. To say here.
Correct. That's what I was thinking is somebody comes to your house and you try this new medical practice and then they die and then...
Right. It's I guess, having to prove that she
made this person starve to death.
Right. If he had access to food and chose not to eat the food because she suggested it, then I guess if she's not actually giving these suggestions as a medical professional, then she's not liable, even though she was pretending to be a medical professional.
That's what I'm guessing is how that worked. I thought it was hilarious that you could kill somebody with your incompetence as long as you weren't licensed to
do so. I can do that.
Right. So even, I mean, again, Shay, by the end of the story, you might have a new career.
I can pretend to be a doctor and not be a doctor and give people terrible advice and kill them.
You've got a new career so far. But this prosecutor also noticed that the patient was missing jewelry, two rings to be specific, but Linda denied having any idea where those went. And so that was the first patient to die and the first one to be missing some valuables.
Well, I mean, you got to prove that she had those rings in the first place.
There was no way to prove that.
I never saw a ring.
You are good at this so far. During this time, the same time, Linda met Sam Hazard. He was a West Point grad who ruined his promising military career by misappropriating Army funds. So they sound like,
yes.
You know.
And this is probably why your mind went to Dukes of Hazzard, because Hazzard is right there.
It is right there. There was something about the...
Hey, Linda, let's get in the car and go on a Hooker Dewey.
Let's get Dr. Hooker Dewey. Take his book with us. Okay, that's so bad. Okay.
I'm keeping it.
So he was a drunk and a lecher and a swindler, and he had married twice before he met Linda, and he forgot to get a divorce before he did marry Linda.
How convenient.
So he went to prison for 2 years for bigamy, and he was released in 1906.
I love that he went to prison for bigamy, and she did not go to prison for killing somebody.
You can kill and steal.
We have our standards here in the 1800s.
In Minnesota, apparently.
Minnesota.
Those are the standards. You can rob and you can kill, but do not marry two women at the same time.
Oh my God.
That.
Clutching my pearls over here.
Okay, so in 1906, he gets out. Sam and Linda Hazard set out for Washington State, where Linda took advantage of a loophole in the Washington State licensing for medical providers. And she was able to work as a dietitian without formal training or a license, since that was considered alternative medical treatments. They didn't need licensing. You could just, as long as you weren't a medical doctor, you didn't need any licensing or training. So she was a dietitian because she didn't need any training or licensing.
Can you be a dietitian these days without a license? Oh, okay.
No, now you're a registered dietitian.
Okay.
It's no longer considered like an alternative medicine.
But aren't there other kind of alternative medicine people that take on that role without having to get a license? I'm sure. Like a wellness coach?
Ooh, I don't know about wellness coaches, because I know like for nurse coaches, you do have to have licensing and training.
But I think the whole wellness coach thing is very undefined on what a wellness coach is.
Well, I don't know. Life coaching is not regulated.
Right.
But wellness, I would think if you're giving health advice in that way.
I don't know.
I'd have to look into that one.
Yeah. Because there's lots of people giving health advice on.
Any.
On internet.
Yes, there are. Any platform, you can find all sorts of advice and all sorts of people will follow it.
Put coffee up your butt, everyone. Yes. You heard it here first.
Are you supposed to chill it first or just straight out of the brewer?
Well, that would burn your butthole.
Well, the whole thing is stupid.
No, it's great advice. Linda Hazard probably approved of coffee enemas.
Actually, you just wait.
Oh, all right.
You just wait. You could totally do this job.
Yeah, it's a good thing that I am that I have morals and ethics.
I don't see them right now. This entire episode so far.
If I were to turn these talents to evil, think about what I could do.
For sure.
Okay.
I think that's any smart person, though.
I don't know if we've established that I'm smart yet, though.
Oh, I established it a long time ago. Smart and engaging. You are dangerous. All right. Jinx. It was considered an alternative medicine and did not require a medical degree, and she was legally allowed to be called doctor. In fact, she demanded it.
Doctor no degree.
Even when she's, you know, being questioned by police and detectives, she demands that they call her Dr. Hazard. If they call her Miss Hazard, woo, you're in trouble.
Give me the respect that I have earned by not going to medical school.
By creating imaginary treatment plans for also that are highly abusive and deadly.
And also probably for imaginary problems.
Yes. Yes. Wow. It's like you're Linda reincarnated. You kind of know the story over there. All right. So Linda started practicing in Seattle, commuting by ferry from a 40-acre spread in Olalla, Washington, in Kitsap County.
Now, I still am not clear where Olalla is. Can you describe to me?
It's on the peninsula. It's past. So if you were, you can take a ferry from Seattle to there.
Okay.
Or you can drive now. I don't know if you could at the time in 1906, but you can now go over the Narrows Bridge from Tacoma through Gig Harbor up that way before Bremerton.
Okay.
But
okay.
On the way to Bremerton, you'll go by Olalla.
Okay.
It's a beautiful, beautiful little, it's very country-ish, but on the peninsula, so it's coastal-ish. It's nice. Not coastal-ish. It's, what do you call that? The Puget Sound area. So it's beautiful.
Puget Sound-ish.
Quaint-ish. She named her new property Wilderness Heights and began the process of building a sanitarium to practice her art of starvation.
Nice.
By 1908, Linda and Sam were in full swing at Wilderness Heights in cabins and a house while the sanitarium was still being built. Locals had started to embrace her medical theories, and one of her first victims in Washington was Daisy Maud Hagland in 1909. Her family were Norwegian immigrants, and her parents had once owned Alki Point.
Oh, wow.
So very prominent in this area. She sought treatment with Dr. Hazard for an unknown condition.
Hysteria. It was hysteria.
No, that would be known. All the women were having it. Very contagious.
Right. I know. Especially when your uterus wanders. I hate it when that happens.
I know. I gotta go find the dang thing.
I know. I mean, that's the reason I got mine removed, is it just kept wondering.
Mine was going rogue. Maggie sought her treatment at Wilderness Heights with Linda, and she was there for a total of 50 days when she died at the age of 38. So not very old, but she left behind a 3-year-old son. Before I tell you who this son is, she was 38 and left behind a 3-year-old son. I feel like back in that day, that was
fairly late to get started. Yeah. And only 50 days of treatment.
50 days of treatment.
I mean, that has to be
some serious starvation.
Yeah, because it should take, I mean, if they're giving you any calories,
right,
you can stretch that starvation out for months and months. That seems pretty
fast.
It's
pretty intense starvation. Sheesh. And then she developed some new treatments I'm going to get into here later. Cool. And I don't know if she had been doing those at the time that Maggie Hagland is there, but poor Maggie left behind her son, Ivor Hagland. Ivor? And he is known he's very famous in the Pacific Northwest for owning restaurants. Ivor's Seafood, famous for his clam chowder.
Oh my gosh.
What is it? Miles and miles of clams?
Acres of clams. Ivor's Acres of Clams. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's amazing. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Even though she died, her husband believed in this treatment to the extent that he actually takes Ivor to Linda for treatment a couple of times as a child when he's been ill. It doesn't state what kind of illnesses he had.
Oh my gosh.
But he would bring Ivor to Linda for treatment. And he testifies in her defense later in life.
Oh my goodness.
Crazy.
That's insane.
This death of Maggie Hagland does not deter Linda in any way. She has a few more victims just that year. Ida Wilcox, Blanche Tyndall, Viola Heaton. They all succumb to starvation. Mrs. Maud Whitney and Earl Edward Erdman in 1910 become her victims. In Erdman's diaries, he enters his course of treatment for February, has 18 entries in total, starting with the meek amount of food allowed, an orange, a strained tomato broth, or a juice, one of those, not more than one, but up to 3 times a day.
Oh my gosh.
As the time goes on, things start to get reduced. Maybe it's every other day that he's getting one of these items. And then he starts to describe the pain that comes with starvation, the malaise.
Your body eats itself.
Mm-hmm. All of his muscles are aching and wasting away. The inability to sleep, so you can't even get away from it.
Oh my gosh.
And the food, so as the food decreases, so does his condition. And he is eventually taken to Seattle General Hospital. which I think is on Grey's Anatomy now. No, that's Seattle Grey. Just kidding. No, Seattle General does not exist anymore, but apparently there was one. He was taken there on March 28th, 1910, and he was a civil engineer for the city of Seattle. Not a big dummy, not somebody easily coerced, but he did die of starvation under the care of Linder Hazard. And then the Seattle Times has a headline that reads, "Woman MD kills another patient."
Well, at least they got her role correct.
Right. Called her an MD.
Yes. She would have been very upset if they had just said a woman.
We are at 9 within 2 years. I didn't get to see a roster of all the patients. So what if she had 3,000 patients and 9 died, but 2,998, 91.
I can't imagine that she treated
cancer.
That many.
No.
Well, I mean, if it was that kind of statistics.
There's no statistics on that.
No, I'm sure she probably.
I didn't see any success stories, actually.
Well, and then you wonder, is she not going well, gosh, this isn't working, but she just doubles down.
She doubles down. Wait till you hear how she doubles down.
So then you have to think, is she doing this because she wants to hurt people? Because she likes this control?
That was my thought until the very end of this story.
She just really, I'm going to let you go.
That was the thing because,
I'm going to keep my pants on.
Keep your pants on.
I'm going to put them back on first.
So the headlines read, "Woman MD kills another patient," but despite that headline and the locals renaming Wilderness Heights to Starvation Heights, people still keep coming.
Oh, good grief.
They still want treatment from Linder Hazard. They're still believing in this starvation as a cure.
She must be really good at her marketing.
Yes, she did publish out in magazines and had ads at very famous or high-end hotels and restaurants. She would have flyers for people.
Wow.
In 1911, Frank Southard, a lawyer, C.A. Harrison, a publisher of Alaska Yukon magazine, and Ivan Flux from England, all of them coming for treatment and passing away in Linda's care. The families from these victims start to report missing money, jewelry, and other valuables. But yet still people come. A former legislator and publisher, Lewis Ellsworth Rader, was wasting away when authorities tried to convince him to leave. But Rader declined and Hazard moved him to an undisclosed location so that it would not bring attention and denied any visitors.
Rader, so she kidnapped him.
She basically kidnapped. That's medical kidnapping, folks. Rader died weighing less than 100 pounds and he was 5'11".
Holy crap. Wow.
Yep.
Wait, it's not a medical kidnapping because she's not a medical doctor.
Oh, right. It's a dietary kidnapping.
That's terrible. Okay.
Our laughing at it is terrible. Okay, so officials are called to investigate when he dies, but the health director determines that Hazard is licensed and her patients are voluntarily coming to her for treatment.
She's not licensed.
It's a different kind of license.
Okay.
She gets to call herself a medical doctor as a dietitian kind of license.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But not a medical doctor license.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes.
It doesn't make sense, but that's how it was in 1910.
I'm just
going
to say 11. Yes, because I can't.
And so now, in Minnesota, she couldn't be prosecuted because she wasn't licensed. And now she's not prosecuted because she's licensed and they're coming to her voluntarily. So she is, there's nothing they can do. The state did say if she started treating children with her starvation treatments, that they would step in. But at this point, these are adults voluntarily coming for treatment. This pattern continued and autopsies would consistently list starvation as the cause of death. That is, unless Linda did the autopsy, which she did do. Yes, she often did her own autopsies in a bathtub at the sanitarium.
Ooh.
And the cause of death, according to Dr. Linda Hazard, was always whatever they arrived for.
Ugh.
Whatever condition they wanted to be treated for, not out of starvation, according to Linda.
Anxiety.
That is the very, by the way, one of the last remaining pieces of Starvation Heights or Wilderness Heights over sanitarium. That is gone. But apparently there's still a bathtub over there that you can see where Linda Hazard used to do her autopsies.
Okay, we're going to have to go there.
If you call it an autopsy, if you're just going to
slicing somebody up in a bathtub.
And then say they died from hysteria.
Right.
All right, so finally, Linda Hazard meets the wrong patients. sisters Dorothea, aka Dora, and Claire Williamson were extremely rich, and they were in their 30s. They're described as British hypochondriacs.
It's a special flavor of hypochondriac.
Yes,
and a lot different than the Irish hypochondriac.
Exactly,
hypochondriac.
Very. I think it comes with different dresses. They're a little more pale. I don't know. They had been visiting someone in Victoria, BC, when they were in the hotel and read literature about Wilderness Heights and the sanitarium and the starvation treatment. And they decide this treatment is the answer they have been seeking for their imagined poor health. It sounds like, according to family reports, that these young ladies were often complaining of every kind of health condition. They were just never well and always needed some sort of treatments. So in 1911, they arrived in Seattle for treatment and do not disclose any of this to their family members, as they know family would not approve. They are placed in Buena Vista apartments under the care of Dr. Hazard's nurse. They are provided only vegetable broth for nourishment, but Dr. Hazard has implemented additional therapies for her patients by this time.
I'm excited.
The treatment now includes hours-long enemas.
Oh, goodness.
Not coffee, though. But they're hours-long, and patients are known to scream out in pain during these treatments.
Ugh. Okay, I just felt that in my bowels.
Yes, right? You've got a little cramping going on.
Oh,
that sounds, aching.
Oh, my God.
Burning.
As you wash away all of the beneficial flora in your...
For hours.
For hours.
Hours.
That's...
And then, in addition to that, she now has added massages. These massages are where Linda pounds on her patients' heads and backs with her fists while yelling, "Eliminate! Eliminate!" That's a massage where she beats on you with her fists, screaming, "Eliminate!"
All right, I'm quitting my job. I'm going to become a massage therapist.
Shay, this whole thing.
I can do that.
And then you can, I mean, especially if you got a 40-acre piece of property on the water. Oh, my gosh.
I'm not giving you an enema, though. I don't want to put any, I don't want to be anywhere near anybody's
Me or
butthole.
Anyone.
No, just you. I'll give everybody else enemas, just not you.
I don't know. I get it. I get it.
I don't know. I don't know if I want to take our friendship
to that
to
level.
The enema giving level.
Meanwhile, Hazard takes control of the sisters' finances by having them sign over power of attorney.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
This was a practice that she learned to do about 1911 when she would start as part of the intake process. She would take over power of attorney in case they needed somebody to manage their bills and certain things while they were
right. She was just being helpful.
Helpful.
Yeah, it's just an additional service she provides.
Yes.
So lovely.
She convinces them it is best to store their diamonds and real estate deeds in her safe as well.
Oh, it'll be very safe there.
As the sisters' conditions decline, Hazard has them transported by ambulance to Olalla, to Starvation Heights. She has Claire sign over a stipend of 25 pounds of sterling per year and directions to be cremated in case she dies. And she does. And so that happens.
So... in case you die under my care, I just want to make sure that I'm provided for after your death.
Right. After your death, I would like to be provided for. And instructions from you to dispose of your body in a way no one can.
Right.
But she does not get cremated, at least not at first. Dora, her sister, manages to sneak out word to their childhood nanny, Margaret Conway, summoning her for a visit. This is the first time anyone in their family or circle becomes aware of where they are, what they're doing. It sounds like, and I don't know for sure, it sounds like their parents are not alive during this
okay.
anymore. Margaret leaves Australia and arrives a month later in Olalla. It took a whole month to get there.
Yeah.
Upon arrival, she is informed of Claire's death and that Dora is insane. She is taken to ER Butterworth and Sons mortuary to view Claire's body. Now, E.R. Butterworth and Sons mortuary could be its own rabbit hole for us. So he participates with Linda in cover-ups with his his embalming and such. So, and stealing of people's things make it into the caskets, all this. So this goes on for decades, actually. World famous mortuary, because he was one of the beginning, he began embalming
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he's like one of the pioneers. First pioneers of embalming.
Yeah, let's put it on the list, man.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome.
I know, because it's still there.
Oh, okay.
And but what his part is with Claire, E.R. Butterworth works with Linda to prepare a body for Margaret to view that is not Claire, so that Margaret will view a body that is not emaciated.
Oh.
So he switches up the bodies, and Margaret says, that is not Claire. And he's like, yeah, it is. It's just this new embalming procedure makes people look different. So convinces her that this is in fact Claire, but that she just doesn't look the same. And apparently she believes that. But Margaret is then taken to see Dora, the insane sister, who is now 75 pounds.
Oh my God.
She attempts to take Dora, but Dora insists on staying in therapy and is doing her a world of good. So I don't know. At some point she does get word out to Margaret. So she must have felt like she wasn't getting good care for a second. But then now feels like she is. And well, that could be at the abuse of, you know.
I was going to say, yeah. I wonder if Linda has right. convinced her and threatened her and
right.
to stay.
It's, you know.
Sounds like she's very manipulative.
Maybe another massage if you don't mind your own, mind your P's and Q's.
Six more hours of enemas today if you don't.
Yeah. Yeah. So Margaret decides to stay at Starvation Heights or Wilderness Heights and watch over Dora while she's undergoing treatment and try to get her to eat some more food. In the meantime, other patients are approaching Margaret, who's not a patient there, right? So she's not starving and not under the same conditions as they are. And they're asking her to save them and telling her they are prisoners.
Oh my gosh.
So Margaret informs Linda and Sam that she is taking Dora and she's leaving. The Hazards inform Margaret that they have obtained legal guardianship over Dora and she will be spending the rest of her life with them. While informing Margaret of this situation, Linda was wearing Claire's silk dress. That's the dead sister.
The balls on this woman.
I know, right? Margaret is able to get a hold of Dora's uncle in Portland, which is the closest living relative. And he is able to rescue Dora by giving the Hazards $2,000. By this time, Dora was 60 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
Full grown adult, 60 pounds. So after Dora leaves, the British consul insisted that Kitsap County prosecute Linda Hazard. Kitsap County declined, saying they did not have the funds to successfully prosecute somebody for a case like this. Mm. So Dora paid the bill and had her prosecuted.
Wow.
In August 1911, it's just so few years.
She just needed to get out and have like a hamburger and got her mind
senses
back
about her.
And she's like, oh, yeah, that was terrible.
Yep. So she paid the bill. She had Linda Hazard prosecuted. And while waiting for trial, Linda managed to kill two more people.
Oh, good grief, this woman.
But after a very dramatic trial, Linda spent 2 years in Walla Walla prison for killing a dozen people.
Still less than her husband for bigamy.
Right, right.
It's terrible.
And then once she's released, she and Sam moved to New Zealand where she picked up where she left off.
Oh.
In 1920, though, she returns to Walla Walla to finish building her sanitarium. And now she calls it the School of Health. And since she's no longer licensed. So she had to call it that because she's no longer licensed to run a sanitarium. So now she has a School of Health. Her new facilities included an autopsy room, though, in the basement. Because it's a school.
Get it out of that basement.
All schools. All schools have autopsy rooms.
Yep, absolutely.
In 1935, the world was done a favor and the sanitarium burned down. In 1938, Linda Hazard herself died. Guess how she died?
Starvation.
Mm-hmm. This is where I'm curious about her motives,
okay.
You know, like after suffering several health issues, she treated her own condition with her own methods and she died of starvation at the age of 71. At the end, she is suspected of killing thousands of dollars worth of assets. So this is in 1906 to, I guess she dies in 1938, 1935, it burns down, but she...
Right.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars at that time.
I wonder if she had a severe eating disorder. And I wonder if that went into the psychology of her wanting to treat people with starvation, thinking like, I'm going to make this
could be
actually a good thing.
It would be hard to tell from the pictures of her, in the sense that A, they're older pictures, obviously they're not that great of quality. B, there's a lot of clothing that they wore back then.
Dresses are pretty fluffy.
She doesn't look like she's starving herself nor binging herself. Okay. Hard to say from there.
Yeah.
I think she was just truly a conspiracy theorist that just, you know, there's those people that think the facts, what we've been doing, the reality of what we see is really not that the reality. And the right way to go is this obscure unknown thing is the real truth.
Sure.
She seemed like that type to the extent where she did it to herself. When I was compiling the story, I was thinking to myself, this was greed, really. I mean, she was treating very wealthy people and then keeping their money.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to do that is if they die.
Right.
So I thought really this just worked out in her favor for greed. But when she uses this treatment to treat her own ailments, it made me think that possibly she believed in it.
But also greed.
But also greed. Yes. I mean, that was just a bonus.
Absolutely.
So to close us out, Starvation Heights is local lore and still talked about to this day over in Olalla, Washington. Not much of the site remains anymore. The fire that took it in 1935 has left only just some remains of some cabins. And then that bathtub apparently is still there.
That's creepy.
Yep. That is all that's there. But it's still a site people come looking for to this day. And that is the story of Linda Hazard and an introduction into E.R. Butterworth's.
Yes. Oh my God, that was good. What a creepy lady.
She is so creepy. And the fact that, like, I don't know if it was at this time, they're just, you know, first of all, everybody's spread out, right? So I imagine you could get away with a lot more. People couldn't see, couldn't hear. There's just people just trying to survive, right? So you're not really paying attention to that, and you don't have time to pay attention to that because you got to make sure you're taken care of.
Right.
Knowing what we know now, we didn't know then.
Right.
All of those things in place, but it's just, she's a serial killer.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Under the auspices of medical care.
Sure. You know, it's interesting. I think, too, at that time, medical science was still, I mean, we're still constantly learning and growing, right?
Forever. That will be forever.
There was still a lot of unknown then, and then information wasn't easily gathered, right? We didn't have access to information that we have now. Mm-hmm. So you relied upon newspapers, magazines, word of mouth.
Right. And they took time.
Yes. And to verify any of that
right.
is incredibly difficult, right? Because you can't just get on Google and look for a source. And most people aren't going to know how. Or, I mean, I was listening to something recently where they were talking about the origins of the FDA and the Food and Drug Act, and how before that, milk was treated with chalk, and then they would put sometimes arsenic in it because it was blue. And that they would find horse worms swimming at the bottom of it, and that people died every year, like hundreds of children died every year from drinking what was called milk, and that rations of men in World War One then, their rations were rotten.
Oh, yeah.
And because there was no preservatives, but they would put horrible chemicals, they would put formaldehyde into canned meat, because it would stay fresher longer. But and we knew at that time that formaldehyde was poisonous.
But they'd do it anyway.
Yeah. So it also makes me think of back, I want to say it was World War One, when radium was first kind of discovered before the hazards of radium were discovered. And it was touted as a health remedy. And so there were springs that you could go soak in that had radium in them, because one of the things of radium poisoning is you get a glow. Your skin turns pink. It looks healthy. You look healthy. You actually do look like you're mm-hmm. glowing at first before, you know, like gray. Your hair starts falling out, your teeth start falling out, your bones start turning into, you know, honeycomb. They would sell water with radium in it as a health tonic. And the women that were working in the factories making watches and timepieces, that's when they discovered that radium would glow in the dark. And they were painting the watch hands with the radium. And one of the practices that these women working in the factories were taught is to get a fine point on their paintbrush to run between your lips between every stroke. So there would be radium paint that they were painting on it, and then they would put it between their lips to get that sharp point. So when these women started getting cancer like crazy, and the factory refused to acknowledge it. And this was kind of one of the first cases of I think there was a big case where they finally were able to bring a lawsuit against one of the factories and start some workers' rights and mm-hmm, safety in mm-hmm. factories. But I think they dug up some of these women's bones like decades later, and they would still glow in the dark.
Oh my gosh. That's insane.
Like, women were losing their jaws because...
That's what I was thinking. I was picturing lips falling off.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. Their bones would become... Mm-hmm. Just,
starting there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh! Anyway, yeah. So, you know, the starvation thing, yeah, the fasting thing, I know, was very, very popular. I mean, think about Kellogg, famous for Kellogg's cereal. He had some very, very weird sanitarium, and that's where Kellogg's cereal, do you know the story of Kellogg's cereal? So the cornflakes came from, he
it's
believed.
It's what we should all be eating now when we don't have money, you know. Did you see that?
No. I don't know what that is.
That was their latest commercial about inflation and can't feed your family, just have a bowl of cornflakes.
Oh god.
Or frosted flakes, I don't remember.
Well, cornflakes originally tasted just like nothing, like disgusting, because they didn't have any sugar on them at that point, because according to Kellogg, sugar and spicy foods and strong tasting foods and masturbation all were bad for your health.
All in the same category, out of nowhere. Comes down masturbation.
And so the cure for masturbation was bland foods. That's one. Yeah, you got to look at that story. I wish it was a Pacific Northwest
the
thing that we
could do. The cure
for masturbation,
masturbation
is cornflakes.
Pornflakes? Did you say
pornflakes? No, that's not the cure.
Oh my gosh. Anyway. Disgusting.
So I, you know, quack sort of things.
Our obsession with sex.
Yes, yes. Also,
and liking it.
I think one of the other things that Kellogg would promote at his, or promote, what's the word I'm looking for, at his sanitarium was mastication, not to be confused with masturbation. The whole theory that if you chew every bite of food 130 times,
130,
you will, that somehow is good for your health.
Very big jaw muscles.
That went around on the internet about 15 years ago, too.
They would tell us that.
Yeah, but I mean, we're talking about chewing it until it is liquid.
Right.
Was the point, until you didn't have to actually swallow.
It's absorbed through your buccal, your cheeks.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there was something about that it was better for your health if you didn't actually swallow your food, if you just chewed it until it was a liquid and it just like naturally went down your throat. Mm. Can you imagine dinner parties?
Right.
Everybody just sitting around.
Oh my gosh. It takes 6 hours to eat dinner. Well, there is lots of evidence that calorie restriction is beneficial for your health. When I would take care of patients in the ICU, they would restrict calories while you're intubated and things like that. And I know for inflammation, they're recommending various time frames for fasting.
Right. I've read that there's some, like, especially like intermittent fasting mm-hmm. can be beneficial, but not all the time.
Right. Yeah.
They've said
time should you be 60 pounds and 5'11".
No. And severe calorie restriction is long-term is very, very bad for your health. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. That was great.
It was fun.
It was awesome. Well, guys, thank you for tuning in. And we want to remind you that we have a Patreon now.
Whoop, whoop. We're big kids.
We are.
So we're like official podcasters, thanks to Shay.
And a lot of you are probably like, what's a Patreon? And it's just a way for our listeners to help support us, because making this podcast is not free. And now we've got, you know, a small mountain of debt behind us for starting this. And well, we bought, look, I bought a diffuser. I needed it. It was very pretty.
Oh, oil diffuser. Yes.
It needed to be smelled better in here.
What's in there now? Lemongrass.
Lovely. Lemongrass, yes.
It is a vibe.
So we need to pay for Shay's extravagant $20. I think it was $22.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
I feel like it should be
$12. So there's several different tiers. For $5 a month, you get access to our bonus content, and we're going to be releasing 1 to 2 bonus episodes a month. For $10 a month, you get that bonus content. We'll send you a sticker, and you get access to a private chat so that you can actually directly contact us. That's for the people that aren't actually related to us and have our phone numbers.
Yes. And actually, I'm going to start cutting them off.
I know. You can only talk to me if you pay $10 a month. I love it. Like your daughters.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm sorry, you have to join the Discord if you want me to take care of your child.
Is your subscription up to date? No. You can never. I would never. For the grandkids, that's a whole different thing. Just the kids.
I'm not doing anything for you. I'll do whatever for them, but not for you personally.
My poor daughters. Ever since the grandkids are born, I'm like, you know, I love them more than you.
Jeez. And then at $20 a month, and that's the hot dummies level. Oh, I didn't tell you the names of these levels. $5 a month, that is the bird nerd level. $10 a month, that's the sexy Sasquatch level. And $20 a month, that's the hot dummies level. And that's where you get everything in the former two tiers. Plus, twice a year, we will send you a piece of excellent merchandise, like a hat, a t-shirt, a tote, a mug, a water bottle, something like that. You get access to the private chat. Plus, you get to tell us what our bonus episodes are going to be about. So that is the best one to be in. The other thing is, if you do not want us to send you merch, we will happily make a donation to the charity of your choice in lieu of sending you merch. So
I mean,
look at that.
Merch could be a Rainy Day Rabbit Holes t-shirt. Tank top.
I know.
Pretty cool merch.
Yep.
Because Shay does a great job doing our designs.
Yep. The store should, by the time this comes out, the store should be up and running. Oh, I forgot to tell you. If you're in the $10 or the $20 level, you also get 10% off of merch at our store. So if you want to buy stuff, you get 10% off for being special. Also wanted to let you know that if you are a $20 a month member, you are extraordinarily intelligent, extraordinarily good looking, and your butt looks great in those pants. Just wanted to let you know.
Yep.
So, all right, guys. Well, we will see you next time. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify or wherever you listen, and follow us on social media. And
see you down the rabbit hole.